Hi there, Paul Auger here from Taming Tech, the podcast.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Auger. In today's episode, we speak to Thomas Michael from Michael Management. He is the founder and CEO of Michael Management.
And namesake
of Michael Management.
Yeah, Michael Management, Thomas Michael.
Yeah, great alliteration there.
Mm.
And Michael Management is the second largest online platform, training platform for SAP courses, second only to SAP. This year, they're celebrating 20 years, which is really great that we got to speak to him in this year.
Look, the thing that I really enjoyed about this interview was the throwback elements, the way that we spoke about how he was doing cloud computing and allowing people to do sandbox environments very, very early on. And I look at my experience with IT and around the 2007 mark, or even when he was beginning in 1995 doing training and developing with SAP, things have changed quite dramatically. And if you are sitting there listening to this on your iPhone and sort of like watching us on YouTube, none of those things were around when he was doing this, when he was starting out.
Yeah.
And having that kind of vision and that kind of forethought is brilliant.
I think that's also interesting from an entrepreneurial perspective, is how you weren't just exploring in the interview what's happened with training, where it started and where it's gone to, but also the entrepreneurial element of it. Like, why did you start this? How did you think? I mean, that he was a forefront runner in online training. He started online training in 2007, Coursera, Udemy, Khan Academy, which I thought was a real pioneer. Yeah. And they were. I'm not taking that away. But yeah, 2007, they had Michael Management started doing online training. And as you said, introducing the sandbox and that sort of thing. So I think that's really, really great. But as I was saying, from an entrepreneurial perspective, it's really great that you explore that. And I love that in the interview, he also acknowledges that they tried many things that didn't work. We obviously seeing 20 years down the line what did work. And I think that's really, really important, because as an entrepreneur, you don't know what's going to work and you have to try stuff and you have to experiment. Mm. And that's the hard part. That's the hard part in life, and it's the hard part in business as well, is the possibility of failure and facing that and going, I might fall flat on my face.
So this honest interview with Thomas is quite nice and revealing. It shows as an entrepreneur that there aren't always successes. There are failures along the line. And what we as entrepreneurs normally see is the Facebook or the LinkedIn version of your business, the one where you've got this new client, you've had the success, you've closed this deal. And Thomas actually goes into the fact that not everything was a success. He tried things. He didn't know if it was going to work. And some things worked.
And he also trusted his instinct. He looked at this and he said, yes, I think this is working. I think it will work. Let's try it. And they tried it, and some stuff worked and some stuff didn't, as is always the case, I think.
Absolutely. The thing that's also interesting is that he didn't have research behind him to say that this would work. He realized that there was a need in the market because he felt there was a need in the market.
Yeah, he was relying on what he knew of the market, what he was seeing with his clients and that sort of thing. Back in the day, I think now they're doing surveys and that, which is also great to see, that they're surveying their clients and him sharing what's coming out from their service. I think that's really interesting. So I think for anybody who is interested in online training, who is interested in being an entrepreneur, who is interested in hearing where training is going to, Thomas gives us behind the curtains look a little bit into where he thinks that's going. I think it's also interesting just to take a moment, because we often take things for granted. I mean, this month we're celebrating a year since we had our first online course up and published. And we thought we would celebrate that by having a podcast and talking to other people. So it's interesting that we take that for granted now, that that's how online training happens, or that's how training happens. But it hasn't always been that way. And it's very interesting to explore the history of the training and online training and where it's come from and where it's going to, and what trends Michael Management is seeing in this industry. And I think it's also very interesting for you as an ex-teacher exploring and also I think confirming with Thomas that what you're seeing and what you're feeling about how people learn and what they're experiencing, it's confirmation for you. Yeah.
But I think before people sort of like start screaming spoiler alert, let's actually move on to the interview now. We're going to come back on the end of this and give you a little bit more information about where you can find this episode, where you can subscribe to us. But if you need to look for something and you're running out, go to taming.tech/1 and you will find this episode. And if you want to subscribe to this, go to taming.tech/subscribe and you will see all the places you can subscribe to us on
YouTube,
Twitter,
Spotify,
other places.
Or our website, there will be a transcript of the podcast, an edited transcript.
Yep.
So if you prefer to read, we're just talking about training. There's different ways that people enjoy consuming information. There's also a transcript on the video on YouTube if you prefer to watch videos without sound, or if...
like on the sly, you know, so like without sound. Yeah.
Without sound, yeah. There's a variety of ways. I also think if you're interested in training in the corporate space or just training in general for yourself personally, there's a figure running around in my head. I think it's $200 million that IBM saved moving all their training to online training. It's a huge growing industry. It has been growing for years and it's going to continue to grow. And of course, COVID and the lockdown has just given it a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge. So find out about it.
Brilliant. And if you haven't done an online training course, look it up. What are you interested in? If you're interested in SAP, let's go to Michael Management and see what they can help you with. If it's something else like wickering or bread making or programming, there are so many courses out there. Get out there, learn, and let's see if we can help you find the best places for it. But let's get on to the interview. Next up, Thomas Michael.
From Michael Management. Enjoy.
Okay, how's it, Thomas? How are you doing?
I am well, thank you.
Okay, that's good. I see that you're in New York right now on a miserable rainy day.
Yes, back at home after a trip to London and now back in New York quarantining for 2 weeks.
Okay, I know this is quarantining's being a bit weird, but to be honest, I went out to the shops the other day and saw the first Christmas decorations up. And actually just had to walk out of the shop. I actually couldn't do it. It's the 12th of October right now. And it feels like they've figured out, let's just bring Christmas much earlier so we can make all the money back.
Since every day feels the same these days anyway, why not start Christmas early?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So what we try and do is we try and do a thing called a quick questions. Just to start off, get everyone to sort of like relax and get everyone to get to know you quickly. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Fire away.
Okay, let's see how well you do. There are no wrong answers except for the ones that we're gonna judge you on. What is the weirdest food that you've ever eaten? Now you are German, so all German food doesn't count.
What's not weird to me, but it seems weird to a lot of other people, is something that I like to eat in Germany for breakfast. It's a roll.
Yes.
With raw hamburger on it.
That sounds.
And it has some raw onions on it.
Yes. You know? And what is that called?
It's called a Mettbrötchen. It's just raw hamburger and it's a mix of beef and pork.
Okay.
It's raw.
Yeah.
People are weirded out here. They're like, why would you ever eat that? But
I'm fairly weirded out on this side as well. I'm from South Africa. We've got Mopani worms and things like that. And your raw pork just sounds. Okay.
Right? But it's delicious. If we ever meet in Hamburg, Germany, my hometown, I'll
that sounds good.
I'll buy you one.
I'm gonna take you up on that one. What did you name your first car?
Oh, my first car. I don't think I had a name for it. I remember what it is. It was a VW Golf diesel. My mother insisted on buying me a diesel. You figured it's slow and lame and I can't get into much trouble with it. Was she I don't right think he had wrong? A name for it, though, you know.
Was she right or wrong about the game's trouble?
No, yep. Yeah. Okay. There was a reason for it.
Okay. What is the most amazing fact that you know?
I always tell people, actually, I just talked to my son over the weekend, and I reminded him that the most powerful force in the universe is compound interest.
Ooh.
I think Einstein said that.
Yeah, I like that.
So that was an interesting thing that we just discussed over the weekend. I don't know if that qualifies as a good answer, but
I'm gonna say yes. I like it. What kind of cell phone did you get? What was your first type of cell phone?
My first cell phone. I don't know if it was the first, but it was definitely one of the first. I remember I was living in Houston, Texas at that time.
Okay.
And it was a flip phone, of course.
Hmm.
Had a walkie-talkie function as well.
Oh, now I'm jealous.
Yeah, so me and my business partner, we both had these phones, so we could walkie-talkie to each other all over town, and also make phone calls with it.
What year was that?
97, maybe, okay. Or so.
Okay. Right,
somewhere in the 90s. But it was amazing. It was so cool.
Yeah, our technology's actually gone backwards.
Right?
Well, that's depressing. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
My first cell phone was an Ericsson, with sort of like one of those aerials that sort of like flip out, because obviously you had to have the aerial flipping out. And I remember it was one of those very heavy, heavy cell phones, and you could have 20 numbers stored and 20 SMSs. And if you wanted it to vibrate, because vibrating phones, obviously, you had to buy a separate battery, as far as I remember. It was ridiculous, and I'm pleased that we've gone a little bit further than that. Do you collect anything?
I do. I collect old vinyl records.
Do you?
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I obviously had vinyl records, and then and I got rid of them all. And then just the last couple of years, I got back into it. It was something that I always enjoyed back then, and I always kind of missed over the last few decades. So I got back into it, and I get really excited about 70-year-old jazz records.
So what is your favorite vinyl that you have? You're running out of a burning building, you would have to grab your family's safe and everything. You have to grab one album.
It would be Miles Davis, Birth of the Cool, is probably one of my most favorite albums. I have some really old cool jazz records that I'm really into. But I also have most of my collection is 80s music, because I'm a kid of the 80s.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm buying every 80s record that I can.
It's quite amazing how expensive vinyl have actually become now. It's just, I went into a shop the other day, and it just, yes, they do sound beautiful. And I do like the whole thing about putting a needle on the record. That's of like that physical action is beautiful. From the, this is like the convenience of it, I think Spotify might still be my favorite.
Everybody tells me, it's like, that's so dumb. Why would you spend an obscene amount of money on these records? And then you hear this, the popping and the clicking. I'm like, that's why. That's exactly why. If I wanted a pristine recording of it, then I'll just listen to Spotify. But that's not what I want. Okay? I want the physical act of putting the record on the player, putting the needle down, hearing the little pops.
The nostalgia element?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The nostalgia brings me back to, you know, back then. Plus, I like the album covers, and I like all the art that went into it. That's cool.
Okay. Last question. What do you consider yourself really bad at?
Oh, international tax law. I failed in college. Yeah, that was the only course I ever failed.
Okay.
Because I cannot think of anything more boring than
international tax law. I'm there with you.
In general, taxes, I find I do understand them, but there's a reason why I outsource that kind of stuff. I don't want to be good at it. I just don't want to do it.
Sounds good. Okay, so getting to the meat of this, I was going through your LinkedIn. And you've been dealing with SAP, and you're a consultant with SAP since 1994. So now this morning, I was actually looking at a website called webdesignmuseum.org. And it sort of like had old websites, like what Apple looked like back in the day and what Microsoft looked and Metacrawler and, you know, all of those from back in AltaVista. And I was looking at these and going, I thought we thought that these were very cool and very powerful and very hip when we were looking at them. You've been doing SAP or SAP since 94. What was SAP like in 94?
It was very, very different. Everything was gray.
Okay.
Right? So I remember that, you know, when you logged in, everything was just a light gray or a dark gray, but it was just gray. Right. There were no visual elements.
Okay.
It was the first time that SAP had a client server architecture where, you know, it's not through a mainframe anymore. It's, you know, through your computer, and you had your own GUI, your own graphical user interface, but it was fairly plain compared to what you have nowadays. And it was much smaller, much easier back then, even though it wasn't ever easy, but it was easier back then. It didn't have as much functionality, of course, but it was pretty plain.
So what did you do with the sharing elements, with getting data into that, with backing up, with anything? How did that all work? Was it all floppy disks? Was there any internet that you could use?
When I started in 94, SAP was on R3 back then. So that was their client server architecture. R2 was the old mainframe architecture. So they were on R3, and I started on release 2.1 or 2.2. So there were no more floppy disks per se, right? Okay. So computers still had them, of course, but yes. SAP was on a server architecture at that time.
You know? Okay. Yeah, no, look, I did see that SAP has been around for 40 years or something like that.
And it started in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite amazing to see what kind of software how the software has actually progressed in that kind of time. And just to think that there's things that are happening now, like Google or Facebook, that's been around for 5, 10 years or 20 years. And you've got something like SAP that's been around for 40 years. It's mind-boggling, really. It's before Windows, it's before DOS, before a lot of them.
It's amazing to think about how you know, it was just these five guys in the 70s that they used to work for IBM Germany, actually. They had this idea. Their leadership didn't go for it, so they all quit their jobs and started SAP to fulfill this dream in this tiny little village of Waldorf. It's nothing. It's a dot on a map. Right. And you fast forward now, and now 90%, I think I've read something, some crazy number, like 90% of all transactions in the world somehow run through an SAP system.
Or interact with an SAP system.
Exactly. Or touch an SAP system.
That's
amazing.
Ridiculous.
And most people are oblivious to the fact, right? They wouldn't even know. You know, I always pick up, like when I do go to a store, and then sometimes I look at the cashier's screen. I'm like, oh, that's an SAP screen. SAP, but they probably don't even know. Right?
No, they probably don't. So you've actually been doing it since 94. And you said, like, we're doing consulting with SAP since 94. And then in 2000, you started Michael Management, which I'm going to assume is because your surname is Michael. That's why it's called.
Yeah,
and fantastic. I'm not, I like it.
Creative guy, and that was the domain that was available at the time.
I like it. I like it. Simple and I like it. But you guys have just turned 20. I mean, that's a hell of an achievement. 20 years doing this. What was your typical client or your profile of a typical client in 2000?
In 2000, it was a much different company than we are today. I started Michael Management as a boutique consulting company. Business was good at the time. It was fairly easy for us to launch. We had a bunch of big clients that we worked before. It's mainly Fortune 500 companies that I work with, helping them implement SAP, and then very specifically the asset management area or asset accounting area. That's what we always focused on. It's a very important area in SAP. Everybody has assets. Everybody has a balance sheet, right? But it's so highly specialized of an area and kind of a niche-y, smallish area that there wasn't a lot of people working in that area, to be honest. There weren't a lot of experts. So that's why I focused on it. I always specialized in it, and it's done me well.
Well, look, I mean, the thing that kind of blew me away is that you guys started training SAP in 2007. Online, let me clarify that, online in 2007. Now, if I look at some of the big players out there, you've got the Khan Academy only started in 2008. Udemy starts in 2009, Skillshare in 2010. I mean, Coursera only in 2012. You guys were way ahead of, I can't find anyone actually that was before you guys. You guys were on the cutting edge. You invented the edge, if that makes sense. That's a hell of an achievement.
Yeah, we were definitely one of the first. And that's probably because when I was working for SAP decades ago, I used to teach a lot of their training classes, right? The old traditional classroom training classes.
Yeah.
And I remember they were very much death by PowerPoint. I remember having to start the class on Monday morning and the first slide was up. And in the bottom right-hand corner, it would say slide one of 680. and it really did. And
people that's depressing. Like,
God, this is going to be a long week, right?
Yes.
So, and then, you know, fast forward to like 2006-ish, 7-ish, you know, our clients came to us and they always needed training. And that was the first time when these authoring tools or new authoring software hit the market that allowed you to create content that's not PowerPoint based, but more simulation based. So, and I thought it was a very interesting concept. So, and then we played around with it. And after a bunch of iterations, we found a format that people really responded to. They liked that. It was hands-on simulation courses. It wasn't PowerPoint driven. It looked like you were logged into an SAP system, but you weren't, right? But it looked like it, and you could simulate interacting with the screen. You can click on the buttons and fill out the fields just like you would in your real SAP job. So it was true learning by doing it at that time. So, and then we created one course, and then we created a second course, and then a third. And, you know, fast forward to now we're the second largest provider of online SAP training after SAP itself.
That's incredible. Look, I mean, if I look at 2007 and what I was doing in those days, everyone was training via PowerPoint. It was just what was done. And then I think a couple of years after that, Prezi came out just to make the PowerPoint more interesting. But it's still a boring way to do it. It's still, you're not sort of like getting involved. You're not pushing the buttons yourselves. You're not interacting with the software. You're watching a PowerPoint and you're reading a PowerPoint. So the fact that you guys have actually done this is incredible. It really is. So now, how did you know this was going to work? I mean, this must have been a hell of a lot of effort to get this up and running. How did you know that this wouldn't be for naught?
We really didn't know. We I had a hunch, right? I knew how bad it was. So I thought, well, anything better than this there must be customers for this. But we didn't know. There was no research or focus group or anything like this. So we're a small company. We're like, well, let's just do a couple of courses and see what happens. We have plenty of other ideas and projects that didn't work, by the way.
Okay. Right?
This just happened to be one that worked out really well for us.
What were the other SAP trainings looking like? They were in person, they were PowerPoint presentations, was there anything remote happening?
Yeah, so back then there were really only two options. And we noticed that when our consulting clients, they came to us and said, Tom, listen, we don't need consulting right now, but we just hired a new accountant and that accountant needs training. But at that time, the only options they had is to send that person to a 5-day SAP class in one of their training centers. That class costs $5,000 plus the travel expenses. Right? Or if they don't want to do that, and most people didn't, they're like, we can't afford this. We can't send every accountant to a $5,000-$7,000 class. The alternative is, or have a trainer come on site and train that person for a day or two, but that's not scalable either.
No.
Also, and there were really no other options back then. Now, there was no online training. SAP didn't have online training. No, we offered online training before SAP actually did.
Love it. I love it. So like you little whippersnapper, you. But the other thing in 2007, you also did the sandboxing systems. You also sort of like brought those up. Now, in 2007, and I checked, Azure wasn't there. There weren't any other cloud providers to sort of like spin up virtual machines and stuff like that. How did you do a sandbox in 2007?
Yeah, that went hand in hand with the training.
Yes.
And I thought back to when I started in SAP. It was really hard to get content for there were no courses that you could just access, and there were no sandbox systems that you could just play and practice in. So it was very difficult to get started back in my days. So I thought, when we do this training, wouldn't it be nice if somebody could take a course and then log into a sandbox system and actually practice what they've just learned? Right. So same thing. We didn't know if it would work or not, but we had this idea that there's got to be a market for it. And we like it. We think other people would like it too. And same thing, it took off. We offered that before anybody else too. SAP now offers it too, but.
Yeah, but they're copying you. They're copying you. Let's just be honest.
And they do it in their own way, of course, totally different really than ours, but. But yeah, so the idea is, you take some training and then you want to play and practice, right? So you need a live system. So we think they go hand in hand. And the people that take the training and they work for a company where they have an SAP system, well, they still can't play and practice in those systems because security rules are typically so tight that people don't want you to play and practice.
Yes. Right?
So that's why these sandbox systems are a great way to improve your skills.
So did you have your own servers? Did you scale a couple of servers, install SAP on a couple of servers, and allow remote access into them? How did you physically do it?
Yep. So me and my partners, we had an SAP license, and we started with one server and one system, and then every time they upgraded, we upgraded, and then added more servers and more systems.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, now we have a little server farm and
Look, I think the fact that we're in 2020 now, if you want to get rid of your server farm and just spin it up on an Azure, Google Cloud or whatever it is, it's just going to be much simpler than what you guys had to go through in 2007.
But, yes. Yeah. And that's probably going to be in our future too. The move, we still run our own servers physically, but we're probably going to move to the cloud too. Just like you said, it's so much easier and more convenient to spin up a box.
Mm. Yeah, and in terms of buying hardware and things like that, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't really, we don't want to be in the hardware business.
No.
Let these guys be in the hardware business. They're so much better at it than we are.
So you guys have been training now since 2007. You've been with SAP since 94. What has kept you interested in SAP for this amount of time?
It's the sheer scope of SAP. People don't realize how big SAP is. It took us probably 10 years, almost 10 years, maybe 8 years or so, to develop all the courses for the ECC 6 system that we wanted to develop. Right? And you're talking hundreds and hundreds of courses, thousands and thousands of lessons. It took a very long time to just cover ECC 6. And that was a stable release. Everybody is and was on ECC 6 at that time. So it was a good environment for us to put resources into it, to develop more content for it. But then, of course, SAP came out with S/4HANA, their new release, brand new, you know, release. Everything looks different. So we were thinking, well, okay, so that means we have to develop all new content. Do we really want to spend the next 8 years doing that? Mm. Or do we want to leverage, you know, all the other smart SAP guys in the market and have them create the content, right, and put it on our platform? So it was a bit of a shift in our business model.
Yeah.
Originally, we were the platform and the content creator or provider. Now we're shifting more towards we're the platform and all the other smart SAP people in the world, they're the content creators, and they put it on our platform, very much like Udemy does, right? Hmm. And that allows us to create a lot more courses in a shorter amount of time.
Hmm. Look, as a, I don't know if this is true for you guys, but as an ex-teacher, I was a maths teacher back in the day, and I would say, like, I would teach a concept and I thought I was teaching the concept beautifully, and 95% of the staff, of the students would get it. There was that 5% that often sort of like turned to their next door neighbor and said, how do you do this or whatever. It never offended me because everyone learns differently. And if I don't explain it properly, someone else might explain it better. Have you guys found the same kind of thing with your trainers, that if you guys are teaching it one way, having the variety of trainers now actually makes the content more rich, more vibrant, more the learning more effective? Have you found that?
Yes, and that's exactly one of the reasons why we wanted to do this, right? And like, again, when I taught SAP's courses, their content, there was always one voice, one flavor of ice cream. It was, yes, everything was very much the same. And you either liked it or you hated it, right? And then when we created our own courses first, same thing. It was our style, our voice, our everything. People liked it, but I always thought, well, we're not the only smart people. Yeah, there's a lot of other people that are smart and they can teach it better or differently, or people might respond to this instructor better than to that instructor, right? So that was one of the reasons why we opened up the platform for other people to create content. And we do not enforce a duplicity rule, for example. So if we already have a course on SAP purchasing, that's okay. If you want to create another course on SAP purchasing, absolutely do it. Go ahead, right? Because you'll cover it differently, you'll talk about it, you'll explain it differently, and people might respond to your course better than to the other course.
There also might be the different industries. I mean, if you're setting up SAP for manufacturing and you're setting up SAP for something else completely, there are going to be different things you have to keep in mind. They're going to be different prerequisites you have to put in place. You have to do different parameters. There's definitely different things that you have to put in place. So yes, I don't think you're just doing a generic SAP course.
Exactly. Yeah. And it gives it more texture, right? To have all these different topics or topical areas taught by different instructors and different style and manners. I like it a lot, actually.
So now what you guys have got is, now you've said, like, you've got the SAP and you've also sort of like started introducing the live instructor led courses. So now that is, I saw on the website, it does a 1 day jumpstart class. So if I'm sort of like, I've just been employed by a company that's running SAP, I would jump onto that class and I could actually have a live instructor explaining stuff to me.
Yeah, so it feeds into what you just said, right? So people learn in different ways. Some people learn well with self-study e-learning.
Yeah.
Other people really want a live instructor to teach it to them and show them, right? So we wanted to cover both avenues. The self-study e-learning is still the main mode of learning these days, yeah, but it doesn't cover everybody, right? So, and that's really an offering for mainly our corporate customers, right? So if they come to us and they say, I have this team of accountants or buying agents, you know, we want to train these people. So we put on these 1 day jumpstart classes. That was always one thing that I think SAP struggled with. Their courses tend to be very long. Like I said, I taught them, and now the asset accounting class is a 5 day class. That might have worked 10, 15 years ago. Today, nobody has a week to take off. No, right? That's tough to do. And then also you cover things in these classes that you know that person will never ever need that piece of knowledge. Yeah. And so what we like to do is we chop things up into smaller bite-sized things, and only teach people what they really need to know right now. And if they feel like they need to take the advanced level of it or the configuration course for that, they can do that separately. Right? But we don't cram it into a 5-day class. That's just too much.
The thing is that I find interesting about what you guys are doing is that you've got a learning path as well. So if I want to be an SAP administrator, on your website, there are 4 different learning paths. There's the SAP HANA administrator or SAP solution manager, architect or system administrator, or things like that. And the thing that's interesting is that each of them say, well, this is 37 hours or this is 40 hours or whatever it is. And then I can actually go through those particular, the routes almost, to find out this is exactly what I'm looking for. Take these particular classes. Rather than sort of like actually having to go, well, I don't want to talk about the SAP security and authorizations, which might have different stuff to the SAP HANA. So I do enjoy the fact that you kind of have more direct things for each individual person that they are looking for. And that was just one example. I mean, there's some other ones where there are 18 different routes.
Yeah, and all these learning paths were really a direct result of, we do a big survey every year amongst our community, and we have a pretty big community. And we ask them, what's the number one thing you need or you want? And learning path or career guidance, if you will, came out on top. And that was probably the result of us having so many courses. And then people always ask, where do I start? And then, okay, so with this course, and then what do I do? What's next? And it's hard to do when you have 400 plus courses to figure out which one should I take, right? So that's when we sat down, and we've always had these learning paths. I don't think they were very good in the past. So this last year, we actually just overhauled, this year, we overhauled all of the learning path and made it a lot more obvious what the path or the track is that you need to follow if you want to work as a, and then give it a job title, right? So we cover most of the common SAP job roles. Okay. Right? So if you want to be an accounts payables clerk, there is a job path for it. Or a buying agent, or an HR administrator, or a database administrator, we have these paths already pre-configured or pre-designed for you.
And if I've actually worked on SAP before, and there's other things I want to sort of like move into now, do you have like a self-assessment tool or anything like that to sort of like say, well, you know all of that already, so you can start at step 30 then?
Yes, so we have what we call our SAP skill checks.
Okay.
That's something that we always tell, especially our corporate customers, when they say, oh, I have this group of people and they need to be trained on SAP. The very first thing we always tell them is that, well, you really need to make sure you train the right people on the right content, right? Because if you let's say you take somebody and you make them go through 20 hours of basic SAP skills training, and then the person comes out and says, I didn't learn anything, I already knew all of that stuff. Well, not only is that a waste of money, it's also a waste of time, right? So we always say, well, before you assign these courses, do a quick little skill check of your people, right? Have them take these tests. And so we have a skill check for basic SAP skills. It takes 15 minutes, take the test, and the test will tell you, yep, you're at this level and maybe you should take a course or not. You probably don't need a course. You know this stuff already.
Okay.
You avoid wasting people's time by having them take training on content that they already know.
So would you suggest then that if a company is running SAP, that they actually reach out to you guys, do the SAP self-assessment first or the skill check first, and then basically see what the missing parts are for their staff?
So first of all, yes. If you're a company that runs SAP, we always want you to call us.
Okay.
Right. The skill checks are really for those folks that are not 100% sure where the skill levels of their teams are.
Okay.
We just signed up a new client actually in Italy, They're brand new on SAP. They don't know anything about SAP. So they don't need to take these skill checks because we already know, nope, everybody started from scratch. Right? But we have other customers that they have been on SAP for a long time. Some of their users are newbies, others are somewhere in the middle, others are experts. Right? So for those, it would make sense to say, well, take a skill check before you enroll in a course.
Mm. I think it could be interesting actually having a company that has no experience with SAP and start them from the beginning to sort of like say, these are our suggestions for how you lay things out. These are the learning paths. These are, it must be quite exciting actually to sort of like start them from scratch rather than having a mix of skill levels for all the different staff. Because then someone says, I know better over here and I did like this at my previous company. Is it, am I projecting here? What is the?
Yes, I think it's exciting. It's a lot of work, but if it's done properly, I think it pays huge dividends for the company. On the other hand, there's a lot of companies that have skipped that important step, the end user training, or thought they can just rush through it in a week or two just before go live. That never works well. I've worked as a consultant, hands-on SAP consultant for a quarter of a century.
Mm.
I've worked with a lot of companies where the users, when I asked the users, who trained you? Oh, I've never received any training, ever. Bob over here accounting, he showed me a few things when I started. He's like, oh my God, all right? So yeah. That's terrible. Maybe it saves a little money up front, but it costs you double that much, later on to fix it.
Yeah. With SAP, there are obviously massive things that they're doing and they've been around for 40 years. Have you ever thought, this is absolutely terrible. They've done a huge misstep and you thought, I need to move to something else. I need to try another thing. I'm going to do an Excel add-on that will do all the SAP stuff?
Luckily, no. So for me, SAP has always been, and I got lucky, right? I didn't get into the SAP business by choice. It's like I finished college and my cousin was a partner in SAP consulting firm and he gave me my first job. So that's how I got my start. But it could have as well been any of the other ERP vendors back then. Right, that don't exist today anymore. So I got lucky. I got into the SAP world, and it was very obvious and very clear very early on that this is the dominating ERP system for decades and decades to come. Right, companies don't implement these with a time horizon less than 30, 40 years. Yeah. So these systems will be around for a long time.
Look, I mean, while you're talking, I was thinking, as a five-year-old, I was thinking I wanted to be a fireman or something like that. I don't know if anyone sort of like woke up on their sixth birthday and went, I want to be an SAP consultant.
Definitely not, no. Definitely not.
So you guys are also sort of like expanding on micromanagement now. You're not just doing SAP. And the way I got to know you guys is we have a regular expressions course that we've now placed onto your platform for data analysis, for cleanup of data and things like that. What kind of courses are you guys now accepting? And if someone is out there looking to, they want to make a course, they want to put it up on your platform, what is your preferred instruction? What is your preferred study thing?
Yeah, so our bread and butter business is SAP content, of course, and will always be, right? We're heavily specialized in that area, and that's why companies come to us and buy our content. That said, we realize the fact that, there's a bunch of other little systems that touch SAP, and they're kind of sort of SAP training, but not. So that's like the next ring of courses that we started to develop. And that was very popular. Then we released Excel add-ons for SAP. They suddenly became very popular. Then we got into, let's do a few more general Excel courses. And if we're doing Excel, might as well do Word and PowerPoint. And then they were very popular. So we're adding more and more content, but we always kind of want to focus on our core mission of SAP training. Then COVID came along and suddenly all of our customers were asking, hey, do you have any courses about managing remote teams or how to be a better remote manager or how to work from home or how to deal with stress? Thought, you know what, we don't, but what a great topic to add right now.
Absolutely. And
so we did that. We have no ambitions to be like the next Udemy, right? And cover everything about everything.
Yes.
But we realized the fact that there's a few other things around SAP that are important to our current subscribers.
Okay. So if people want to get hold of you, the best place to get hold of you guys at michaelmanagement.com?
Yes, michaelmanagement.com. And then there's a contact us link. You can send us an email or you can chat with us. If it's during regular business hours, we have a live chat. Sarah's on the live chat. She's always happy to chat with anybody.
Well, that's lucky. That's lucky. Yeah. Well done, Sarah. Now, you guys have been obviously on the cutting edge of online training since before, obviously, there was an edge. Where do you guys see that it's going in the next 5 to 20 years?
So just a few years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I remember when we had sales presentations with new customers, we would boast about the length of a course. Like, oh, you take this basic SAP skills course, that's an 8-hour course. It's very meaty. You get good value for your money, right? Those days are over.
Yes.
Right. So when I tell somebody there's an 8-hour course, the very first thing they tell me is like, oof, do you have like a 2-hour shorter version of that? Because we don't have 8 hours to, it's like, yes. So we get that. So everything will be shorter and faster and quicker and cut off the noise. So that's definitely what we're seeing. There's a lot more 1 or 2 hour courses these days that we release than 8-hour courses. Lessons used to be 30 minutes. Then there were 20 minutes. Now a lesson is 5, 6, 7 minutes, typically, for new lessons. So that's what I would tell content creators now. Keep that in mind. People want short, quick stuff. What they want is they want to be able to look something up and then turn and use it right now in their job this afternoon.
Okay. Look, I mean, the thing is, I was actually listening to an interview the other day on another podcast where they were talking about people being trained, and instead of going to YouTube where it sort of like says, subscribe to my channel and sort of like, before we get started, go to my website and all the other stuff like that. And then 5 minutes into that video, then there's the training. People are actually going to TikTok and they're learning off TikTok in 2 or 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's interesting and I might be too old for that. But I do get the point of that, because YouTube and those places where you get free education, there's a lot of things that are not good about it. There are a lot of things that are taking up a hell of a lot of time, sort of like to get past the everything. People speak slowly. I've got my YouTube speeder up on my computer, so I don't have to watch it in one speed because I can't handle how slow people talk. So I get you completely, but I think. At some point, we're going to have to say, okay, a 1 minute course or 1 minute lesson is just, it's too short.
I agree. I think that you're bumping up against the natural limitation, right? What you can cover or learn in a minute or two. So I don't ever think that we'll see 45 second lessons. Right? So I don't think that's happening. The other shift that we noticed that when we first started creating content, it was all these hands-on simulation courses, right? Where you click on stuff, but by design, they're slow, right?
Because yes.
You have to interact, you have to click on it, you have to fill this out. Over the last few years, there was this shift more to video-based courses.
Yes.
Right? And companies like, Netflix and Udemy, they have us watching videos all the time. So that's what people want and like, right? And YouTube. So that's the future too. Everything will be short little video clips.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that we will see going forward is more assignments. At least that's what we're planning on doing. So I'll let you look behind the curtain a little bit.
Okay.
So one of our new things will be, we want to include more assignments, more homework in the courses, where you watch a 5-minute clip, says this is how you do it, and then now your assignment is go do that in your system, right? Or try to do this.
Yeah.
I think people like it.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at assignments and you've got the sandbox environment, it just makes a hell of a lot of sense. Absolutely. I think there's
a survey where we asked people, what do you really want? And the number one thing that they said they wanted were these learning paths. The number two thing was assignments, homework.
So how would you do it in terms of the instructors? Because obviously the instructors might have 500 students, and if they're all doing assignments that are, let's say, free type assignments, going through those are going to be quite challenging for the instructors.
Yeah, we're not going to make or expect the instructor to do that.
Okay, so it's just
for that very reason, right? So yep. This is a self assignment, mm-hmm. So you've learned what you're supposed to do. You know what the outcome is. Now here's the assignment. Try to do this. See if you get to the outcome.
Okay.
We have another thing that we're just about to go live with is with e-learning. People always have the tendency to think or feel like, well, it's just me in my office learning by myself. I'm all alone, right? I can't ask anybody. And we want to show people it's not like that. No, you're one of thousands of students and you're never alone. So we're releasing a new global live chat that students can interact with. So they can chat with a bunch of other students live. And that could be a place where people say, you know what, I'm struggling with this one exercise or this assignment, or I don't understand that one lesson. Anybody have an idea what that thing means, right?
Mm.
So I want it to be more of a community. I want to create tools that allows people to interact more.
You know, when I first started with IT in the, let's say, the late 90s, I found that going onto the internet and looking at forums, especially in people in IT, they often wanted to help for just the fact that they were helping. It wasn't about I wanted something, I wasn't getting paid or something like that. And I do find that kind of interaction with other people live is sometimes one of the most profound things. It actually kind of touches me a little bit. It says, this person is willing to take time out of their day to help me with my thing. I think as long as you don't abuse that, then I think it actually works quite nicely.
It really surprised me too, because we also did a survey of all of our instructors very recently, and we asked them, why are you doing this? What are you getting out of it, right? Mm. Is it professional recognition that you want? Is it the money you're making, the recurring income stream? Or is it that you like to share your knowledge and help other people around the world? Well, out of these three, sharing, my knowledge and helping other people around the world was the number one answer people gave us. Totally amazing. But I didn't expect that. So I thought it was really great. That made me feel good about this community.
Yeah. Look, I think the community element is going to be a beautiful thing. I really do. So now, I'm an ex-teacher, and I obviously love teaching and learning. And obviously, it's very important in IT and stuff like that. And obviously, it's been important in every kind of job and position that I've actually held. How do you keep yourself up to date on the latest technologies? Do you do courses? Do you read experiments? How do you keep yourself active?
I consider myself a lifelong learner. And I take our own, we eat our own dog food, right? So we take our own courses, we discuss them, we have lunch and learn sessions about them. And there's a lot of other things that I like to learn about outside of SAP. So I take courses on LinkedIn Learning, for example. I take courses on Udemy. So there's plenty of other platforms that have amazing content. And I try to stay up to date with a lot of these things too.
Brilliant. So last question before we start finishing off. What kind of project or experience has resulted in the biggest learning curve for you? What was your biggest challenge? Have you drawn on that challenge in your career?
Yeah, the one of the biggest challenges in the SAP world is separating fact from fiction, if you will. So SAP, obviously, they're a software company, so they make money by developing software and selling software. So when you listen to their marketing department, this thing is the hottest thing on earth and you have to have it and everybody will be on it by next week.
Yes. Right?
So then you have to really think, was that really true? So then you start looking at all our customers and you start talking to them and they're like, no, we have no plans on ever using that, or no. Like I remember a few years ago, SAP Mobile was something that was touted, right? Oh my God, you have to be SAP Mobile. That's the new hottest thing. And I was always skeptical. I'm like, I don't see that happening, right? Not for many years. So we decided against creating content for that. In hindsight, it was smart because it was shut down. So that's a challenge to really think about where are we taking this, where do we want to develop content, what's really being used versus what's just a marketing pitch.
Yeah. I think the lesson that I've learned is that skepticism is actually a good thing, is that you need to question for yourself, and you need to see what the big things are and what's important things for you. But yeah. So where can people find you? Where can they get in contact with you? Who are the people that should be getting in contact with you? Go for it. It's all yours.
Yeah. So easiest is michaelmanagement.com. That's how you get a hold of us. If you want to get a hold of me personally, I'm always up for a beer or a coffee in New York City. Look me up. But for most people, it starts on the website. Right. We have our live chat, which is very, very active, 9 to 5 Eastern Standard Time, New York City hours. Or you shoot us an email at info@michaelmanagement.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, Thomas. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Cool, man. Thanks. So welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that. What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I love the quick questions. I think that's great. It's a nice icebreaker. It's great seeing the other side of it. And when we explore the questions together that you're going to ask the guests and that, and it's really great to see what the answers are. Surprising sometimes and really insightful.
Yeah, he didn't do the answers properly. I was expecting certain answers and he did them wrong. So I'm gonna take that up with him.
The eternal teacher coming out, yes. Always grading people on the answers. I see again.
I don't have a red pen. I need a red pen to sort of like mark them as incorrect.
Terrible. Yes. You can send them a report card later.
Okay.
I think that it was really great. I enjoyed the quick questions. I enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about him. I enjoyed the behind the scenes, where they're going, where they're moving towards. I loved the element that came out in the survey when you were talking about your experience of being online back in the day, so to speak.
Yeah.
I remember commenting to you always that I found that so amazing that there are very few industries at that time where you could go online and just professionals from around the world would just say, hey, this is my experience with it. I really enjoyed him revealing that they survey with their instructors, their number one reason for doing online courses because they wanted to help people around the world and share their knowledge. I think that's really great. And I think back to the days of you teaching a number of teachers, we know that most teachers love that moment that I call it like a calling when teachers think.
You feel the penny drop with the students.
Feel the penny drop. You see the light come on behind the eyes. I think that most teachers that we know, certainly, that's really what drives them. I think often people have this perception that teachers, you know, the teacher's pet is the child that gets everything and learns quickly. But I think for, I wouldn't say real teachers, but teachers who experience perhaps a calling or something like that, what they really enjoy is, as Paul said, when the penny drops, when the light is switched on, when they understand the concept, when the information is received.
Yeah. Look, just going back to the quick questions for 2 seconds, there were a couple of things that I found quite interesting. There was the raw hamburger, which
raw
I found,
mince,
raw, you know, yeah,
South
just
Africans, yeah.
For,
it was people that aren't American.
Yeah, the raw, mincy, porky, beefy
yes,
stuff.
Yeah.
And I had to go and Google it afterwards. And if you go into the show notes, you'll actually see someone who talks about Matt Brocken or something like that. And it doesn't look that bad when they look at the video, but it's still the concept of it freaks me out. But if you are German, I apologize. And I don't judge hard.
One of the things that I found really interesting is when I didn't know about SAP's beginnings. I've always known about SAP. Well, I've always. I think the first time, it's always been in the background, but I think the first time I ever heard about SAP directly was in the mid-90s. There was a South African guy that I met who was moving to the UK to be an SAP consultant. I thought what was very interesting is when Thomas was talking about the start of SAP 40 years ago, and when they're in the mid-70s and they started in this small town in Germany called Waldorf. And I don't know if you know this, but SAP's headquarters is in Waldorf. So that tiny little town.
Is it called Waldorf?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I thought Waldorf salad.
Okay.
No. I think that's from the Waldorf story, just as a FYI. Used as fact.
We might have to keep that into the podcast because that's hugely interesting.
Okay. So one of the things I found really interesting was when Thomas revealed the beginnings of SAP, I wasn't aware of that. I found it so interesting that often companies start as a breakaway from another company. Somebody, let's call them an upstart, has an idea.
A little whippersnapper.
A whippersnapper, as you said. That was quite funny. I don't know if I've ever heard you use that word.
I'm really old.
Uh-huh. And so he was talking about how they broke away. They went to their IBM. Was it IBM?
I think so, yes.
IBM. And they went to them and they had this idea and they said no. And so five guys, I think he said, in the mid-70s in this tiny little town started. So there's this progress, this journey that I think is echoed as a theme throughout this podcast. The progress and the journey of micromanagement, the progress and the journey of online training, and the progress and the journey of entrepreneurs. I think we have companies in South Africa and around the world that we know of that have started with somebody having this idea and thinking, I think this will work. And then, you know, when it's done, it looks easy. But I'm sure in the beginning, there's a lot of self-doubt and all of that.
It
takes balls. And it takes energy and it takes the willingness to fail and all of that. So, yeah, I hope that's really encouraging for entrepreneurs out there. I remember when I first started my first business, I thought I had to have this completely unbelievable idea that nobody had ever thought of that was completely unique. And then I realized, no, that wasn't the case.
You just need to do it better than everyone else.
Yeah. Or you need to bring your own personality to it or whatever they say business is done, you know, with people. And never more so than in technology because it's about personality. And you guys spoke about that in the interview where it's about the personality you bring to the training. It's somebody being able to relate better to one trainer than another trainer, just enjoying their sense of humor. I think I've seen comments about your training and some people talking about your dad jokes and things like that. Just funny, you're not being a dad. But anyway.
Yep.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find us on Spotify,
Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts, as they say.
There's also a transcript available on our website, taming.tech.
/1 for episode 1, for the people who aren't paying attention. Secondly, if you are one of those people who'd like to see who you're talking to or see the people who are talking to you, subscribe to us on YouTube. If you want to find me on Twitter and shout at me about making fun of your raw hamburger, I'm on Paul Ogier at Twitter. That's PaulOgier. And the OG is important because I'm OG. And if you enjoyed that, and we really hope that you did, but if you didn't, please tune into the next one because that's definitely going to be better because it will be better because I say it so. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is the next episode has got Dugald du Plessis. He's an IT manager from a large corporate in South Africa called Tourvest Destination Management. Dugald and I talk about splitting a domain from a sister company, moving a on-prem exchange from on-prem exchange to Office 365 or Microsoft 365 as they call it now, and how they planned it, how they sorted that out. It is quite an in-depth and quite technical episode. So if you like technical, tune in. If you don't like technical, the next episode after that is less technical.
And if you would like to be on our podcast or you have an idea of who you would like to see, please give us feedback. We'd love to hear what you think.
Email us on podcast@taming.tech and we will possibly respond back to you if we like what you're saying. Thanks so much. We'll see you in the next episode.